Listening Library presents Murder Among Friends, How Leopold and Loeb Tried to Commit the Perfect Crime, by Candace Fleming. Read for you by Angela Daw. Part 1. Where is Bobby? Chapter 1. Wednesday, May 21st, 1924. 19-year-old Nathan Leopold would kill a child today. He didn't expect to get much pleasure from it. Still, it would be an interesting intellectual experiment, like an entomologist sticking a pin through a beetle. Besides, his friend Richard wanted this murder, badly, and Nathan would do anything for Richard Loeb. Nathan lit a cigarette and looked over at Richard. The 18-year-old appeared calm as he drove the rental car, but Nathan could see a muscle in Richard's right cheek twitching. He knew that sign. Richard was ready, eager even, to kill somebody. On the floor of the back seat, wrapped in a blanket, lay their gear. Rope, chisel, adhesive tape, gags, hydrochloric acid, and hip boots. They had everything they needed. Everything but a victim. Nathan looked at his watch. 2:30. School was letting out. The pair drove into their Chicago neighborhood of Kenwood, a little pocket of fashionable homes on the city's south side. A street away from the Harvard School for Boys, Richard pulled to the curb. He turned off the ignition. They sat there. Who should they grab? They hadn't settled on a specific victim. Any boy would do. Leaving Nathan in the car, Richard walked to the school. Kids poured out onto the playground. He noticed 9-year-old Johnny Levinson, who was in the same fourth-grade class as Richard's little brother, Tommy. Just days earlier, the boy had played at the Loeb house. There couldn't be a better victim. Stick thin and small for his age, Johnny would be easy to nab. Richard turned on his charm. "What are you doing after school?" he asked Johnny in his friendliest voice. "I'm going to play baseball," replied Johnny. "Where?" Richard wanted to know. "Who with?" It was just a pickup game with some friends, Johnny told him. He was headed over to the vacant lot at 49th Street and Drexel. Richard wondered how to lure the boy to the car. Should he offer him a ride? But before he got the chance, Johnny ran off. Frustrated, Richard walked around to the front of the school. He saw Tommy standing on the steps. Maybe he should grab him. Just then, Nathan whistled for Richard to return to the car. When he did, Nathan said, "There are some children playing on Ingleside Avenue. Maybe they could catch one of them." Richard had a better idea. Why not go over to the vacant lot on 49th Street and watch Johnny's baseball game? They could snatch the boy afterward as he was walking home. Nathan agreed. They drove toward the lot. Yes, the boys were there. But from the moving vehicle, Richard and Nathan couldn't recognize anybody. They parked again, a block from the lot, and walked down an alley to a spot where they could see the game. Still, they couldn't make out faces. Could they get closer? Not without being seen. And they couldn't let that happen. When Johnny vanished, the police would put two and two together. No, they'd have to watch the boy from a distance. To do that, they needed Nathan's field glasses. It was only four blocks to the Leopold's house. After dropping Nathan off, Richard drove to a nearby drugstore. He bought two packages of gum before heading to the phone booth in the back to look up Johnny's address in the telephone book. Chewing away, Richard flipped through the pages until he found it. He nodded. He now knew the route Johnny would take to walk home. Minutes later, he picked Nathan up. They returned to the alley near the vacant lot. Passing the field glasses back and forth, they watched the children play. Nathan pointed out a few other possible victims. What about the shortstop, or the kid on third base? Richard nixed those ideas. He had his heart set on killing Johnny. At 4:30, Johnny and some others suddenly walked away from the game. Richard grew worried. Was Johnny coming back? He and Nathan waited, but there was no further sign of the boy. They drove around and around the neighborhood. Who knew it would be so hard to nab a child? Nathan looked at his watch again. It was getting late, almost dinner time. They'd been searching for a victim for more than 2 hours. He suggested they try again tomorrow. Richard refused. They'd been planning this for so long, they couldn't quit. Not yet. One more time around the neighborhood, he insisted. This time, Nathan drove. They passed by the vacant lot again. They went by the Levinson house, too. No luck. That was when they saw him, walking on the opposite side of the street, all by himself. He wore a tan jacket, knickers, wool golf stockings with checkered tops, a necktie, and a tan cap. I know him, said Richard. It was his second cousin, 14-year-old Bobby Franks. Bobby lived across the street from Richard. Just yesterday they'd played tennis together on the Loeb's court. The car passed the boy. Richard signaled for Nathan to turn around and drive up behind him. As Nathan did, Richard climbed in back, behind the front passenger seat. The car pulled up alongside Bobby. Hey, Bob, Richard called. He leaned forward and opened the passenger door.
Do you want to ride home?
Bobby shook his head. His house was only 2 blocks away.
Come on in, urged Richard. I want to talk to you about the tennis racket you had yesterday. I want to get one for my brother.
Bobby moved closer to the car. He was so close, Richard could have grabbed him and dragged him in. Instead, Richard kept talking, kept smiling. Bobby hesitated a moment longer. Then he slid into the front passenger seat. He looked over at Nathan.
You know Leopold, don't you? Said Richard.
Bobby didn't. He turned around to the back seat, eager to talk tennis with his older cousin.
You don't mind us taking you around the block? Richard asked.
Certainly not, said Bobby. Nathan pulled away from the curb as Richard groped around on the floor for the chisel. Chapter 2. The Longest Night. Baby. That was what Flora Franks called her youngest child, Bobby. Don't you realize my age? Bobby would grumble. He'd turned 14 that year, although he didn't look it. Small-boned and just 80 pounds, with dark wavy hair, he liked sports and school and joking around with his friends. His big, soulful eyes belied his mischievous streak. But Flora found his naughtiness part of his charm. Bobby could be a rascal, but he also possessed a sensitive and generous nature. The school essay he'd written weeks earlier proved that. The topic had been capital punishment, and in it, Bobby opined that executing murderers was senseless and immoral. Most criminals have diseased minds, he'd argued. It was not just or fair for the state to kill these people. Flora had been proud of his stance. At a time when most people believed executing convicted murderers was the most effective way of deterring crime, Bobby had disagreed. Boldly and articulately, he'd expressed an unpopular position, and afterward, he'd told his family he wanted to become a lawyer to help people. Was it any wonder that of Flora's 3 children, he was her favorite? She freely admitted it, and every night she tiptoed into his room to kiss his cheek while he slept. So when Bobby didn't come home by 6:30 on that drizzling gray evening, Flora grew frantic. Where was Baby? Her husband Jacob tried to calm her. The boy had probably just gone to a friend's house and lost track of time. Had he said anything about being late? Bobby had come home at lunchtime, she recalled. He'd reminded her that he was umpiring the freshman baseball game after school that day, but he should have been home long before this.
Maybe he's playing tennis across the street at the Loeb's house and forgot the time, suggested their 15-year-old son, Jack.
Jacob went to look. The court was empty. Walking down Ellis Avenue, he peered into backyards and alleys. He, too, was growing worried. He returned home to find Flora phoning Bobby's friends. Was he there? When was the last time they'd seen him? Had they seen him leave? Some of the boys remembered spotting Bobby at the baseball game. One of them had even seen him headed toward home. Yes, he'd been alone. It was 7 o'clock now. The maid came into the living room and asked if she should serve dinner. Eat? How could they eat? Flora paced around the room, stopping again and again to pull back the curtains and look out the tall arched windows. Her eyes strained for Bobby's familiar figure walking along the sidewalk. With every passing minute, Jacob grew more alarmed. Still, he tried to stay calm. He suggested they sit down at the table. Bobby, he told them, would surely be back by dessert. It was a tense meal.
Jack fidgeted nervously in his chair.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?